Welcome to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, where we take you through a day in the life of animal rescues and sanctuaries across the country. Whether you are an experienced sanctuary staffer, one of the countless volunteers who work so hard at sanctuaries each day, or someone who just loves animals, we hope this journey can give you a behind-the-scenes peek into just what it takes to live the sanctuary life. Now, here's your host, Brandon Feisner, co-founder of Louisville, Kentucky's Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary.
Joining us for today's episode is Stephen Podolsky, co-founder of Leesburg, New Jersey's Marley Meadows Animal Sanctuary. Your co-founder, Heather, described you as a guy who loves animals, animal rights, human rights, cannabis, french fries, creative freedom, politics, and good, stupid movies. And said the sanctuary wouldn't exist without the hard work that you put in day and night. And there's, I know we all laugh because it's one of those things that to hear somebody else say it, it doesn't seem real.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, but yeah, that's a pretty good description actually. So I can't argue with that.
So, on your all's website, Stephen, there's a quote from Eleanor Sebastian, and it said, "This farm is run by a passionate family of five, all animal activist advocates who have overcome so much together and have built this rescue from the ground up." And I'm always intrigued when I see other families running animal sanctuaries. And can you tell us just a little bit about your family and where that love of animals came from and why it's so important to you all to do this as a family and involve your kids and all of that?
Sure. You know, doing this as a family, I mean, that's all it's ever been is us together. You know, we haven't had a lot of, and we have groups of volunteers come in and stuff, but we've, you know, we do all the main stuff day to day ourselves. So it's, you know, it's, I don't know, it's kind of the only way we've always done it, you know. But, when I met Heather, you know, we've been together for a little over 5 years now, and she had already had a small sanctuary with her mom, and so they had some animals, and she had asked me to help out with the house for a turkey. And so once I came there and met her kids, you know, who are now my kids, my stepchildren, not only did I fall in love with her, but seeing how passionate all of, you know, her and all three kids were about animals, I mean, I fell in love with all four of them instantly. You know, we became a family of five pretty quick. So yeah, it means a lot to me to be able to do this all together though. And you know, Heather homeschools all three kids even from before COVID, and you know, so much about what, you know, their homeschooling experience and just, you know, preparing them for life, you know, getting to take care of the animals and that responsibility. And you know, you see life and death firsthand, you know, in a lot of cases, in a lot of ways. And, you know, these are three really smart, compassionate kids, and watching them grow up has been a privilege. So
there's a lot of amazing lessons to learn in the sanctuary world that you will never, most kids will never experience in a classroom. So it's a really cool experience for them.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's been really good. I mean, you know, they're three curious kids, and they're all, like I said, really compassionate. They're all smart. They, you know, they always have great ideas. And, you know, I love having, you know, doing it with the kids because their input is so valuable. They're like, they're very intelligent. They're a younger generation. You know, every generation always thinks, you know, they kind of know everything. You're learning from your elders, but you can learn from a lot from the kids too, you know? So.
And I know the sanctuary itself kind of starts back, when you look at the history, it says it started back 6 years ago. It was 2017. But in 2020, from what I read, you all made a pretty big move to relocate 90 minutes away from where you were. And what was it like to make a move like that? How many animals did you all have to bring with you? I mean, that's a pretty big journey there.
Yeah, making a move like that, it was... Oh man, thinking back on it and how much we had to do to move all the animals and to do it so quickly, because you know, you have to take, you're taking care of everybody, you're feeding everybody. And if you have people in, at different locations, it can be really hard. So we tried to get, you know, everything set up as quickly as we could. You know, some friends and family came in and we got as much put up as we could just so we could get everybody here at one, you know, at our new location. I mean, I think within 2, maybe 3 days. And, you know, we had so much going on. It's just always hectic. Always, you know, our vet always laughs because we have just the craziest stuff always going on. You know, you just never know what you're going to encounter. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, you think we welcome the craziest situations, but, you know, animals just get into crazy things. So just transporting them, transporting, you know, giant Holstein cattle, you know, they don't usually get transported a whole lot. You know, they're at where they're at and that's it. So, you know, transporting the cattle was definitely, interesting, you know, but they really did well. And everybody really did well. You know, it was just moving the fencing and getting set up. And then once we got here and we had some temporary fencing and we started putting up the pastures, you know, you're just wanting to get everybody set up. And I feel like the past 2 or 3 years we've been still getting everybody set up. But we really got everybody, you know, basically set up pretty quick. I mean, it was pretty impressive how everybody came together, you know, our friends and family and you know, Heather, the kids, and everybody, you know, worked hard, and we got everybody into our new location pretty quick. But yeah, it's moving is, yeah, a lot of people, you know how it is to move, and it's just, it's a lot. Moving an animal sanctuary, I wouldn't want to do it again. So, you know,
yeah,
I'm glad where we're at, and we like it here, and I'm glad that's, you know, I'm glad we picked it here. We like where we're at, so that's good.
Yeah, it's a lot for most families to think about how hard it is just to move a cat or a dog or something like that, and
yeah,
1,000+ pound cat, whole nother adventure.
Oh yeah. Actually, my a friend of mine that owns a feed store, Butterhoff's feed store in Central Jersey there, and he came by with a steak body truck, and you know, we didn't even have a moving truck. We just did it with, you know, our truck and a trailer and then the steak body truck from the store. And just, you know, people, you know, came together and helped a couple of friends and neighbors with their trucks. And, you know, as crazy as it was, you know, it was, we got it done. But the animals and their reaction to, like, oh, where am I going? Because, you know, moving is not a common thing for these animals. You know, they're, you know, getting them set up and getting them, you know, getting them comfortable, getting them in their routine is everything. So, you know, getting them, you know, some of them took the move better than others, you know, but most of them were pretty good.
Yeah. And that kind of curious nature of some of those animals, again, most people don't, if you've never been around some of the farmed animal species, or you just know them, people that just know them as food and don't understand these animals and don't understand their personalities and everything.
Yeah.
The curiosity they have when they get into a new space and what is,
oh yeah,
it's curiosity and fearfulness and not understand, like, all of that in one.
Yep. All the different new sounds and checking everything out. I remember we had put, the cows in an area, and then there was just an old fence there. And I said, oh, well, you know, it's almost 4 foot tall. That should be fine for, you know, the next day until I get the fence set up. And as soon as we put the cattle in there, Morty just walked right over the fence. And I was like, oh, my God. Luckily, I just got him and, you know, walked him right back in. And it's not like, you know, we had other fencing and around and stuff. But he, he just showed me that, no, that fence is not tall enough.
Yes. So one story that we absolutely have to talk about is Marley and his prosthetic tail. And is his name the inspiration behind the sanctuary name, and kind of what's the story there? And then what else can you tell us about Marley and his story?
Wow. Marley, him and Dakota were actually rescued at the same time. Me and Heather had probably been together maybe only 6 months, and we knew that we, you know, had fallen in love, and we were taking care of the animals, and you know, we fell into our routine of taking care of the animals together really quick. And when we heard about Marley and Dakota and we had the opportunity to rescue them, we knew that not only was we wanted to do it, but for it was a big commitment for ourselves. I mean, you know, they could live to be 20 years old, you know, if in, you know, sanctuary conditions and they're taken care of. So, and we knew that that was the responsible thing, was to make sure that we wanted to be together for 20 years, you know, to make sure that we were going to be. So we, you know, we talked about that and we knew that we did. And, you know, we went and went out there and went to look at Dakota. Actually, Dakota was the one we were sure we were going to rescue. We weren't sure if Marley was, you know, they didn't have names yet. We just knew there was female Holstein. And then when we got there, we had the opportunity to rescue the other one. And, you know, that ended up being Marley. And it was just, getting them out of there. It was, we knew from then on that we were going to be doing that. And for a long time, it was a big responsibility, you know, and we took that very seriously. Cause you know, like I said, they can live very long lives. So yeah, it was a big responsibility and we knew that it was, a big commitment to each other. So as you know, in a relationship and as a family and, you know, we took that serious and, you know, going out there and picking them up. It was, Marley actually kind of chose his name. We were in the vehicle. It was a minivan we got them into. And, me and Heather were talking about names and I said this name or this name. And I said, what about Marley? And he looked at us and he mooed, you know, like, yep, that's my name. and, you know, knowing that was going to be that type of commitment for that long and what that meant for them, for us. And once we got to know Marley, his demeanor, he's got the kindest, most gentlest spirit. You know, he's over 2,000 pounds and, you know, I go out there and take naps with him. I rub my back up against his neck, you know, I just, you know, it's not that I'm, you know, ignorant of how big he is or, you know, he could crush me, but, you know, I know where I'm safe and where I'm not. And, you know, he's one of a kind. I mean, I say he's one of a kind, but he's not, you know, the whole species is gentle when, you know, when they're, you know, being like a lot of other, like a house cat or a dog, you know, if you socialize them and you spend time with them and they're not, you know, in these, slaughterhouses or, you know, in places that they're going to be treated as, you know, that they're going to be food, you know, their animals are fearful. When we went and rescued Marley in Dakota, the fear on the other cattle that were there. We went into a room where there must have been 50 cows, all females, and they weren't hooked up to any machines at the moment, but they all had really thick chains on. And they only had about 3.5 foot of chain to where it was hard for them to stand up properly how they normally do, where they, you know, they stand up with their back legs and then their front legs go up. When their back legs went up, the chain would go tight. And, you know, I, not really thinking, kind of slowly took my hand up like to pet one of the cows. And, you know, her eyes were just big and round and white. And she was scared. And I, you know, it wasn't that she was necessarily scared of me, but she was scared of, you know, how other humans had treated her. And she, you know, was fearful. And, you know, that made me want to leave with Marley and Dakota that much more, you know? So yeah, that was in Lancaster, PA, where obviously they have a big, lots of dairy operations and stuff. And, you know, we're not 100% sure, but we think Marley and Dakota are actually, twins. And that's why they were letting Dakota go at all, because, when a female and a male, are twins like that, the female will be born, sterile. So they probably knew that they couldn't make money from her, and we're like, okay, you know, so.
And so, kind of the cool and amazing story, as it turns out, long term is the story of Marley and his prosthetic tail and everything. How did that come about, and what happened there that was necessary? And obviously, I guess, was that after the move to your all's new property?
Yeah, we were here, maybe a year, 6 months, a year. And we have their area set up. We have, they're not really traditional pastures like you'd see at a lot of other places. We set it up, we have two cattle pastures, and both of them have about half of it is like an open area, like a traditional pasture. And then the other half is like lightly wooded. From what we've done some research on, before cattle were, you know, domesticated, you know, they were more of an edge species, which meaning they would, you know, they would go out into the pastures and feed, but then they would go into the edge of the woodlands, and that's where they would sleep. And so, you know, we thought we would try to kind of mimic that. And what happened was Marley got his tail stuck on a little branch and just kind of, it took his tail right off, and the end of it, you know. And he was obviously scared, but, you know, kind of not too bad when we saw him. But seeing his tail and not being there, it was, I don't know, one of the most scary things about running a sanctuary. You know, when you see an animal that's either in distress or has come into some type of problem, you know, it happens. And trying to then figure out what you need to do next to make sure he's okay. And, you know, I remember me and Heather and the kids, we quickly got on the call of the vet and were able to get him out of here quickly and sew the rest of his tail up. And then we had to think about, you know, what's he going to, you know, because the tail and the switch that's at the end, that's what helps really, you know, control the flies. And down here, we have a lot of flies. And, you know, we have natural sprays and stuff that help somewhat, but we really wanted to help him get a tail. So yeah, reaching out to them to get a tail made has been really, really helpful for him in the summer months.
I know that it was the first ever prosthetic tail that was made by Derek and the crew at Bionic Pets, which they do so many amazing things for animals all around the country, especially in sanctuaries. And I know firsthand how crazy it can be to keep a prosthetic leg or something else on an animal. What have been kind of the biggest challenges having a cow with a prosthetic tail? And what have you kind of learned through that process?
As with a lot of things with the animals, it's always patience and, you know, doing things in baby steps. We introduced his new tail, and I mean, they did such a really great job of making it. We were really impressed. When he has it on, you know, you wouldn't really, you know, we wouldn't think it was any different than any other cow. You know, the way he swings it and the way it works. The biggest problem in the beginning was not his curiosity, but the other cow's curiosity to it and to what, you know, they would come up to it and smell it. And, you know, we kind of had to like distract them so that, you know, and kind of get them to be like, not, you know, to leave it alone. That was probably the hardest part of it, which, you know, is obviously something we didn't expect, but, it fits him great. And it helps him so much in the summer. It's not needed in the winter. So, you know, we can just kind of brush it and put it away for the winter months, but in the summer it's been so essential. And yeah, the stuff that Bionic Pets has done is just so amazing.
So it's interesting that you say that. The old saying was never that curiosity killed the cow, it was that it killed the cat, unfortunately.
Yeah,
that leads us right into the next section is one of the things that I found was so neat about your all sanctuary was that you don't just consider yourselves a farmed animal sanctuary and taking care of these 1,000-plus-pound animals like Marley, but and Dakota, but you also consider yourselves an unhoused cat sanctuary. And what is it about cats that made them made you all want them to be such a part of your sanctuary life and journey there?
Well, it's kind of interesting because Heather and I, when we met, you know, we were both just, we've always been cat people. And we joke around that, you know, that's kind of like how you can tell if somebody's okay. If you hear somebody say, "Oh, I don't like cats," it's like, "Oh, well, I'm kind of looking at you because why don't you like cats? Because cats are cool. Why aren't you cool?" But no, it's I don't know. We just have always loved cats, and but it wasn't, you know, something that we really had planned to do until we moved to our new location. And as soon as we got the place, the previous owner said that there was cats living on the property, you know, a small colony. I think 5 cats at that time. But after we were here just a short time, we realized there's cats everywhere. And not a lot of them were being taken care of. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where we were cat people and we saw them needing help. kind of like, I don't know. And it was an active choice, but also not, if that makes sense, because there was just so many cats in this area, that just, they weren't even, you know, getting fixed, getting vaccinated. And I mean, the first year, I think, that we were here, we fixed over 50 or around 50 cats, and vaccinated, and either they're here or, well, most of them are here, but
yes. And so what would you say? Obviously there's a lot of differences, but also some similarities there between running and dealing with, the farmed animal species. And then dealing with smaller species and other animals like cats and some of the other animals you all have. What are the kind of similarities and differences there? Because it's a little different housing and a little different fencing and a little different everything.
Yeah, it really is. We've had to, a lot of the cats are in our living space. You know, our sanctuary is owned by the animals, our business, Marley Meadows Animal Sanctuary. So we just look at all of our space as our space and animal space. So we have a lot of cats in the house, and we built catios off of the house. And we also have some other like porches that were attached to the house that we made into cat, you know, areas for a couple that are, you know, a couple of areas. We have different groups. We have a main group of cats of almost around 30 that are in the house that have, you know, we have a couple different catios, but then we also have, a couple other cat areas for separate groups. And then there's also the outside cats. So it's multiple groups of cats. So that's, you know, but it's all about routine. You know, when we're feeding everybody, we just kind of take care of everybody. And it's, you know, fundraising is, you know, it's different people, you know, donate to different things. So that's kind of different sometimes. Some people would be like more into, you know, maybe donating for the cat stuff. So more posting about the cows. Maybe people are like, "Oh, you guys also do that." So I guess at times maybe it's confusing for other people, but it's always just felt natural for us because since we've moved here, they needed us. You know, the town, there's nobody here really doing anything about the cat problem. We started getting calls as soon as people found out that we were here. And so we started having some meetings about what can we do. And then, you know, it was kind of like, it really wasn't even a decision because it was just, we really just had to help. They needed the help. And, I don't regret it at all. There's so many amazing cats that, we've been able to help, and I don't know, we're just cat people. So it really wasn't too hard. And, you know, I like I said, I don't regret it at all. I love these guys.
And it's interesting. You talked about how, like your space was always the animal space. It was always everyone's space. And I know that, there was a picture on, I think it was on Facebook, and it was back from, I want to say it was 2018, and it was Heather in the living room, and it was extreme. It was like middle of winter and extremely cold outside. And that you all brought Marley and Dakota, I believe it was, inside. There was the cows in the living room.
Yeah.
Space. So it's not just the cats. The cows are welcome.
Oh yeah. Actually, when we first, literally 2 days before we moved here, one of the alpacas that we had rescued, of our group of alpacas was pregnant, and she had given birth like right before, and then they moved here, and the baby kind of wasn't doing good with the mom. Like, the mom wasn't, you know, taking to her as her first and only baby. And so the baby Kriya was in the bedroom with us for our first, you know, week here at the sanctuary. We had the little baby here with us. So, yeah, it's always just been us and them all together.
Yeah, nothing, once you run a sanctuary, nothing is ever your space anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
At that time.
Yeah, if I'm out there working on the tractor or the truck, I got cats out there helping me, you know. So they're everywhere, and that's, you know, we're animal people. We wish more people were, you know. We kind of hope that people will see that, you know, there's not that much difference between a dog and a cat and a cow and a goat and a sheep, other than what people have preconditioned us to think that's what they are. You know, these animals are all very intelligent. You know, I mean, to classify a dog and a cat differently from like a pig and a goat, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. They're all very intelligent animals, and they're all kind animals. I mean, there's just a lot of myths that people, I think, are told that as you get older, you get the opportunity to you know, break those myths if you want to, you know.
Absolutely. And so we know that you have cows and cats there. I know you brought up the alpaca there. What other species do you all have that live there? And about how many total animals do you all care for now?
Around 150. Heather would know the exact number because she is my other half and good with all that stuff. But yeah, I know it's around 150 all together with cats, the cows, goats. We only have one sheep. That's Bodhi. But he's with our other goats, and we have a lot of chickens, ducks, and turkeys. We did have a couple rabbits and chinchilla, but they recently passed. So not as many smaller animals anymore, because we've been helped, you know, because of the cats have kind of taken over a lot of the space. And once some of our older residents that were like I said, the rabbits, once they passed of old age, we haven't really been taking any smaller animals like that. So, but we do a lot of chickens, ducks, and turkeys, rescues. You know, we have a good bit. So, yeah, I think that's about everybody. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody, but I know we have around 50 cats here too.
So I think you saying that you do a lot of the feathered friends with chickens and turkeys and ducks leads us right to one of the amazing residents that we learned about through your social media account and that we kind of fell in love with and just love them in general is Terrence the turkey and his journey to overcome liver disease. And what can you tell us about Terrence, and then kind of specifically the difficulties in treating something like liver disease in turkeys, because there isn't with turkeys being a species, really just like all of the farmed animal species, unfortunately, to where when something happens to them, in most cases they're euthanized generally when they're not in a sanctuary environment. There's not research and there's not stuff out there to really tell you, and there's not a lot of vets that know how to care for them. So what kind of has that journey been like?
Yeah, it's been tough. I mean, with a lot of the stuff that happens with the animals, it's, you know, we're on the internet researching and trying to educate ourselves on what information is out there to take in. And you know, it's definitely been a journey, you know, because we've had Terrence was actually the third turkey that we've had with seizure issues. The first two were older and kind of more at the end of their life. And now we have a different vet, finding a good vet that is, you know, that you're kind of on the same page with is so important. The first, I think 2, maybe 3 years we were a sanctuary. We had a couple different vets, didn't really feel like we had, found our person, if you, you know, but, over the past a little over a year, we've had the same vet, and he's great. Dr. Jacob, he is, really great. So it's been, you know, having the right people around you, I guess, is always important. But like I said, there's not, like you said, there's not a lot of information out there. So, like I said earlier about our kids, they do a lot with the birds. They are, they would blow you away how much they know about, all the feathered species. But Terrence's situation, it was really, really scary. He started having seizures, and, you know, the vet and us, we were all trying to figure out what, you know, what to do. We were running tests, and luckily we were able to get some medication that started to, you know, slow the seizures. But yeah, it was a really scary time. We were worried we were going to lose him. And, you know, like you said, there's not a lot of information out there. So it's, you're just kind of, you feel like you're winging it, and you never want to, you know, feel like that. You feel like you want to get the best, you know, the best treatment. But even when you're talking to the vet about it, it kind of makes you feel better, because they're like, there's just not a lot of information out there, even from them. So, but, you know, having the right people that are willing to try and take, I don't want to say chances, but, you know, do things that maybe, that they wouldn't do before. We tried some medication that, you know, that ended up working, but it wasn't something that was, you know, like, hey, you know, this is what you do when a turkey has a seizure. This is the medication you give him. We kind of had to figure it out, you know, and the vet did too. So it was a crazy and scary time, but, he's been doing great. So
that's awesome news. I know I saw the other day the post was saying he was now, I think it was 6 months seizure free. So,
yeah,
for many more milestones. And, it is a scary thing. And especially with turkeys, because the way they're bred and genetically, they grow so fast, and they have so many problems because of their genetics now that, by the time you get to them, in most cases, to try to rescue them, you're kind of fighting a losing battle almost, because not only are you trying to fix issues that are currently happening, but you're trying to overcome all the things that are already wrong because of the way they grew and everything. So
the way they've been bred to be bigger, to produce more meat for people to eat, is you know, it does you feel like you're fighting a losing battle, because, you know, you're fighting the way that they've been specifically bred to be. But, you know, we've had some so-called meat birds and meat turkeys, like what people consider Terrence to be, live, you know, pretty long lives, a lot more than people even believe is possible. And so, yeah, he's been doing great. And one more thing I have to say about Terrence and about the situation that happened with him. It was really scary, because he would have seizures at night, and everybody, you know, we sleep at night, you know, people, what are you going to do if you don't sleep? But if it wasn't for our kids, taking turns, staying with him, we may have lost him, because they were there taking turns, sleeping with him at night for over a week. It was almost probably 2 weeks. And you know, they were just headstrong. We were like, no, you know, cause we had them in a room next to ours, but, and there was a window in between, but they were like, no, we'll stay. Cause they were so scared that we wouldn't wake up, you know. And I can't tell you how great it was that they were doing that. And I don't know, these kids just never, cease to amaze me with, their compassion towards animals and how great they are with these birds. I've learned so much from them about these species. Seeing them spend the nights out there, I don't know. It's not something you know, see a lot of teenagers maybe do. Maybe I don't know, but they were they were just, they were doing it. Like, there was no, and you know, ifs, ands, or buts about it. They were going to stay out there with Terrence to make sure if he had a seizure that they could get him up and stay with him. And they did. And he probably wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for what they did.
it's amazing to hear that so about the kids and the level of compassion in that, and just seeing that, because kids do see the world differently and don't necessarily, when they're raised in an environment where they don't have some of those same preconceived notions that the world likes to put on people about animal species and what they're good for, and that's all they're worth and everything else. When they can see the animal for who it is, it's absolutely amazing the impact that has and the connection that can be listening, I will tell you, you have never met like a white-breasted turkey that the same kind that unfortunately millions of people around the country eat for Thanksgiving every year. If you have never met one in person, find a sanctuary near you and do it, because when you meet a turkey, it will absolutely change your life. They are not what people make them out to be. They are absolutely incredible, incredible animals.
Absolutely. Yeah, they really are. We've had some turkeys. When I first met Heather, that's what I was doing, building a house for the turkeys. And getting to know these guys has been, it's been mind blowing. You know, growing up as a kid in West Virginia, I used to look out the window at the wild turkeys and it, you know, I was just always loved looking outside at the animals. And, so it's been really good.
Yes. Yeah, so one of the other, amazing feathered friends you frequently see on your social media is Nectar the chicken, and Nectar's all over the place.
Yeah.
What is Nectar's story?
Nectar is all over the place. Nectar is another disabled chicken, and we've been trying to figure out the best setup for her, and she's gonna need some type of chair and situation for herself as well. She was born with we at first thought it was like a splayed leg, but it ended up being a deformed leg, and you know, she was not able to do well with any other chickens. And so we have her by herself now, and she's still growing. She's not full grown, but I mean, Heather spends a lot of time in her day taking care of her and keeping her spirits up. When she was young, you could tell her deformity would eat for a little while, but Heather would just spend that much more time with her and bring her out and put her in a chair that we had made for her, and just spend time, put something on the TV. You know, she would put some chicken videos on the TV, so she, you know, felt like she had some other, you know, of her own species around. And Heather like the kids with Terrence, Heather with Nectar has just been so amazing. And it's showed in Nectar's spirit now, because she's a different bird. She's really coming around and being quirky. And we have two other birds with some issues, one with a leg that's partially missing, another one with a splayed leg that wasn't fixed at a young age. So we're hoping that the three of them can have an area together and kind of have it like a disabled chicken area. But Nectar's deformity is, you know, pretty unique. So we've been trying to figure out the best situation and how to set her up, you know.
Yeah, and I love to see that, because you have finally gotten to where at least some of the other species with goats and sheep and things like that, you're seeing a lot more. Even cows, you've seen some attempts at doing wheelchairs and different things and being very innovative, but you're just not getting to where you're starting to see that really take off in kind of the avian world with ducks and chickens. So it's awesome to hear Nectar's story and what's going on and the the change, hopefully, that that will kind of inspire in others and allow them to give some of these awesome birds an opportunity.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I really do hope that Nectar Story and even Marley's Tale and, you know, these stories of disabled animals getting to live as normal a life as possible. More people can see that and know that there's so many more animals can have longer, better, more fulfilled lives.
Yeah, and I know one thing, and I brought this up last week when we did our podcast about our sanctuary here and an amazing goat we had named Stitch that we were able to really make a connection with kids talking about how, like, when you go out and you see those one-of-a-kind shoes that nobody else has, everybody wants
them. Yeah.
You see those one-of-a-kind, that bag that and nobody else has, they want it. But then you see that animal or even in humans, unfortunately, you see somebody that has a disability or a difference and everybody's like, oh, stay away from them. And I'm like, no, it's no different. They're limited edition, just like that bag is, or just like.
Yeah.
And they deserve just as much desire to have as that special bag or those special.
Yeah.
They're amazing, and those limited edition animals, man, they change the world.
Yeah, that's, I like the way you put that. That's really cool. That's awesome.
So one big challenge that I know you all had just a few weeks back, really every sanctuary in that mid-Atlantic and northeast area had, was dealing with terrible air quality. I mean, I know I saw some of the pictures just a little north of you all in New York and all that, where it literally, the sky was yellow from the wildfire smoke and all of that from the Canadian wildfires. What were some of the things that you all did during that time, or some of the, like, how did that kind of change up how things were for you all for that couple day period of time? Because obviously you can't just bring, unlike smaller animals like cats and dogs and things like that, you can't just bring 2,000-pound cows inside just to get away from it.
Yeah, no, it was a unique challenge and unexpected too. It was just like, oh, here's this, you know, new problem that we have to deal with. You know, we tried to keep as many animals that we could inside, and you know, we tried to do what we could as best to, you know, make the air quality. We had wet some sheets and stuff like that, and got the cows into their shelters and, you know, kept them in there and blocked the doorways off with some wet sheets. But I mean, honestly, I felt like our response was lacking just because we were so unprepared for such a thing, you know. But it definitely got us thinking about what we could do better in the future. And it's, you know, unfortunately, I think it's going to be something we see again, you know. So
yeah, and I think one other thing that that I wanted to bring up there too is that you talked about things that had kind of jumped up on people and caught them off guard, that I was curious to see how it is with you all, was back with the avian flu outbreak last year, especially when you saw places all throughout the country having to completely isolate and completely contain their birds, and how did that kind of the bird flu, the avian flu outbreak affect you all there? Were you able to, obviously being on some flight paths of a lot of migratory birds there even.
Oh yeah.
Did that have much of an effect on you all?
It ended up not having a big effect on us, but we were very scared that it would. you know, we were, you know, moving our waters and their foods and stuff around, worried that, you know, some random bird passing over, you know, could, you know, you never know how that's transmits so easily. So, I mean, we were worried, and, you know, with any animal, you know, any bird, any animal we take in, we have, you know, a period of seclusion. For that time, we doubled it. I think we usually, instead of going 2 weeks, it was a little over a month for the couple rescues that we did of birds. But, you know, it was scary. You know, it was a very scary time. Past couple of years with issues like that and the smoke, I feel like we're getting all these unique challenges that, you know, it used to, like when we first started out, it's like, hey, we got to get feed, we got to get hay, you know, like now it's like we're fighting forest fire smoke and and different flus, you know, even when COVID hit, you know, there's so many species or strains that jumped over to animals. And, you know, it's just a crazy time we live in.
You weren't thinking when you got into sanctuary life that you were going to be worried about, like, N95 respirators and what type of personal protective equipment to wear and things like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You wouldn't expect it.
So other than like the air quality issues and obviously dealing with kind of outbreaks like the avian flu, have you all been able to like or have you all had to deal with any other natural disasters? I know being there so close to the coast, like obviously risk of flooding and hurricanes and things like that. Is that something that you all like have plans in place for? What does that look like? Obviously being a sanctuary that is relatively close to an area that can be impacted by something like that.
We've been relatively lucky. We've had some, the weather around here is pretty crazy. I mean, you have storms that either miss you or they hit you so bad you're like, wow. And like, we got hit with a lot of rain last night. It's actually raining right now. And, you know, some of the storms are pretty wild. The lightning around here is like nowhere I have ever seen. I don't know even what that's about, but it's really like when the storms come, it comes in like a movie. It comes up over the hill, you know. The weather is pretty crazy around here. But we've been lucky, you know. We've had some trees come down on power lines, but you know, we've got a generator now, and you know, we've got some plans. We have, you know, some plans set up in case anything bad happens, but you know, it's tough. You know, you worry about if something bad happened and we had to evacuate, we definitely don't have enough trailers to get everybody out in one shot. We have talked to some other sanctuaries and kind of made a plan that if you were in need or we're in need, we could, you know, help each other. And that kind of gives you a little bit of security in your mind, thinking that, well, at least I have allies that if I'm in danger, but if everybody was in danger in the area, then that would be that much scarier.
Yes. And I love to see when you see some of those like partnerships and things and alliances come together to be able to do that and help the animals when needed. I know that happens a lot on out on the West Coast with like the wildfires, especially. So it's
really cool
to see those the people kind of partnering and saying, hey, I got your back if you got mine.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives you a little bit of peace of mind and in the rough times, you know, that there's other people going through the same thing and that you have each other's backs.
So I know that you all have some awesome new merchandise out that I saw that I really, really like. We're going to have to work on ordering some ourselves so that we have it. And I think it was released last month. And this merchandise says, it's got this really cool picture on it with, it's like a half a cow and a half a cat, and says, "Why love one but eat the other?" And what was kind of the inspiration behind that design? And then where can people order it if they want to get it themselves?
Actually, Heather had had a similar kind of idea for that for a while. We had one of our supporters draw up something similar to that a long time ago, and because Heather, like I said, Heather had that in her mind. Because you know, a lot of the ways we joke about it and talk about it a lot is, you know, even though they're so different in size, you know, cats and cows do a lot of the same things. You know, you look out and the cows are cleaning themselves like the cats. You know, if you feel a cow's tongue, it feels a lot like a giant cat's tongue, you know. There's a lot of similarities, and it's so the "Why love one but not the other," you know, she's had that in her head for a while, and she's very artistic and creative, and we've had artistic and creative kids who've helped out with some of our merchandise. Our new stickers and stuff, some of them were done by one of our sons. So we're lucky to have creative people, not only Heather. We all try to do artistic stuff whenever we can. So we try to do our own merchandise whenever, and we also have some supporters that are also pretty creative. So, but all our information is on our link tree. Most of it's under Marley Meadows, New Jersey. Or if you search Marley Meadows, our link tree is at the top of almost all of our pages on like Facebook, Instagram. It should be the link on top of any page you look of ours.
The next question would be, do you all offer public or private tours there at the sanctuary if someone would like to come visit?
We recently had an open house event where people could kind of come, and we try to do some events throughout the year. And usually at those type of events, you can kind of get a, you know, kind of a group type tour event. We're just starting to do more, you know, private tours if somebody reaches out. We're just starting to do that again. If people reach out, we do tours. If somebody wanted to do a group tour, we also do that. We just actually put a new path around the entire sanctuary. So it's a nice, walking path, you know, to kind of go all the way around, and, the tour experience is a little better now since we put that in.
Awesome. If someone, I know you said the link tree, if someone wants to find out more information about Marley Meadows Animal Sanctuary, where are the best places? I know you said you are all's link tree. Are you all on social media? Where can they find you all?
Yeah, everything. Heather's on, got us on, I think, just about every social media that exists. So she's pretty good about that. If you look up Marley Meadows Animal Sanctuary or Marley Meadows, New Jersey on Facebook, Instagram, all the social medias. I know there's a lot more than that, but I can't think of them at the moment. But I mean, I know that she's done well to all put them on our link tree, which I think is under Marley Meadows, New Jersey. So
perfect. And I'll get, we'll copy a link to all of those in the show notes so that anyone that is looking to find those can do so. The next question would be, or the last question would be, how can people support Marley Meadows if they want to, after hearing kind of all the amazing things you all are doing? And then I know you all have a really cool fundraiser going on right now with an amazing company that helps a lot of sanctuaries out with Fluffy Cow Coffee. Is there anything you want to tell us about that, and just how can people support you all?
Yeah, we have various fundraisers at different times. Heather just recently put up a new GoFundMe to pay for some recent vet bills. We've had a lot of just crazy stuff this the past couple months. And we have also our events. We have, you know, like I said, our recent open house. We have another one that I think just Heather is finalizing right now. So if you check on our social medias, I think we're going to be having another open house in like a month or two. I forget the exact date, but I know it's going to be scheduled soon.
Awesome. Well, Stephen, I want to thank you so much. You all are doing some absolutely.
Oh, wait, sorry. I didn't talk about Fluffy Cow Coffee.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I would feel so bad. I would feel so bad if I didn't mention that. I'm so sorry. No, Fluffy Cow Coffee is really amazing. They did a fundraiser, actually two fundraisers to support us now. And they do a lot of great work to support a lot of great sanctuaries. And the coffee is amazing. As a coffee drinker, I would feel so bad if I didn't mention that. Their coffee is really good. And they're, you know, the fact that they, do fundraisers to help sanctuaries is just amazing. I wish more businesses did that.
Yes, and I know that I have seen some absolutely amazing amazing fundraisers they've done with sanctuaries all across the country. I'm not a big coffee drinker myself, but we may definitely have to buy us a pack of Fluffy Cow Coffee and give it a try.
because I know yeah, they're really great. I love what they do. They're really nice people, too.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. You all are doing absolutely amazing things there in southern New Jersey at Marley Meadows Animal Sanctuary. We're excited to see how things continue to go, especially with Terrence and Nectar and some of those that are you're kind of doing groundbreaking things and
helping
barriers that weren't there. and then obviously doing even one of a kind things with Marley and his prosthetic tail and stuff. So making a difference for animals all across the country.
Gives
ideas. So keep up all the good work. Thank you for sharing all the amazing stories. And we look forward to talking to you all again in the future.
No, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure to talk about it. And I'm glad that you're doing what you do to help tell the stories. It's really unique experience to help animals. And I don't know, maybe it helps more people, you know, go down that path, or, you know, support other sanctuaries. You know, it's all good. So I'm glad that you're doing this too.
Thank you for listening to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, presented by Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary. To find out more about our podcast and how you can be a part of it, visit our webpage at butterflyvalleyrescue.com/podcast, or join us on social media at Sanctuary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please remember to download the episode and recommend us to family and friends. See you next time.